this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everybody. No matter what your time zone across this beautiful planet Earth of ours, welcome back to the People Speak radio show. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson. The People Speak show normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests in USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. Or you can join us live in the government and politics section of PAL Talk, the largest free chat program in the world, where we have our virtual radio room, the People Speak radio show, that anyone may join to participate during the show. This is a fantastic show tonight. I'm more excited than Prime Minister David Cameron, who found himself another dead pig. We are talking to a very special guest right here. He's the president of the USS Liberty Veterans Association. He's a former communications technician, second class in the Navy Reserve. Following his active duty in the U.S. Navy, he had a 28-and-a-half-year career in the CIA supporting U.S. communications around the world. His 2013 book, Liberty Injustices, A Survivor's Account of American Bigotry, and his website is www.usslibertyveterans.org. We are talking tonight to Mr. Ernie Gallo about the truth about the USS Liberty attack in June 1967. Welcome to the People Speak radio show, Mr. Gallo, sir.
Thank you so much, Steve. I'm pleased to be here.
We are certainly very, very honored to have you here, sir. And we'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour. But my first question to you, Mr. Gallo, sir, is could you briefly describe to those in the audience who don't know much about the USS Liberty what exactly happened to that surveillance ship back in 1967, please?
The USS Liberty was an intelligence ship, and we normally sailed up and down the west coast of Africa. However, as the incidents in the Middle East began to heat up, we were told to weigh anchor and go to Rota, Spain, collect some purveyors and intelligence officers, and sail into the Mediterranean to arrive off the coast of Gaza and the Sinai Peninsula. The Liberty ship, or Victory Hull cargo ship, was modified to be an intelligence ship, and we were very the ship was very different from other naval ships. We were not a man of war. We had 450 caliber machine guns to defend ourselves for repel boarders. We certainly couldn't defend ourselves from anything other than that. We arrived on June 8th, which was the third day of the six-day war. The war started June 8th, the war started June 5th, and we arrived the morning of June 8th. The morning started with Israeli reconnaissance aircraft coming out and viewing the ship. All morning till about midday, we counted 12 aircraft that came out to take a look at the ship and photograph it. And we're very friendly. The planes were more Israeli. And what they encountered, it's something that the picture I want to paint to your listening public, in that we were not some sort of warlike aggressive craft. Since it was the Israelis, we felt very comfortable and relaxed, and therefore, those who were not on duty, one of the things they did was to sunbathe. So, as the planes came over, they found sailors that were on beach chairs and blankets scattered throughout the ship, sunbathing. That's how, you know, relaxed we were. We felt that our ally, the Israelis, were keeping an eye on us. I should also say that we knew that the Israelis had taken out the Egyptians from the Sinai, and they had complete air superiority. So we were not worried about some surprise attack coming from the Egyptians. And
yes, go ahead.
So, in other words, our captain, while he was concerned about being there to begin with, since it was a hostile area, in that you know, war was taking place in that area, he drilled us over and over again, and he was very determined to make sure that our general quarters drills were performed at our utmost speed. And that particular day, he was very pleased that we performed so well, and he mentioned that over the our one MC, ship announcing system. Anyway, we all returned back to work after our drill, and at about 2 o'clock, the Israelis came back, and with three Mirage fighter aircraft came out of the sun and started strafing and firing at the ship. The point I'd like to make right now is that the fact that the Israelis did not want us there, if that was the case, was that they could have handled it a number of different ways. They did not communicate with us. They did not fire across our bow. They did not do other things to, to escort us out of the area. Their plan of the attack, or their plan of the day, was to attack the ship, and that's when all hell broke loose that afternoon, resulting in the ultimate result was that 34 Americans were killed and 174 wounded. It was a bloodbath.
The U.S. government has always maintained that that was some kind of accident. Now, do you contend with that particular scenario?
Absolutely not. If you look at all the detail, you know, as I explained, we counted 12 overflights that morning. With that knowledge of who we were and where we were at, they would have to be very stupid or lack some sort of intelligence to not know that we were an American ship. They claimed that we were an Egyptian horse carrier, a ship that hadn't been to sea in a number of years. But the point is, they were looking for an excuse that our politicians might grasp and say, it was friendly fire. It was an accident. It was no accident. They knew what they were doing from the very beginning. And we have plenty of evidence to support that.
Is it true that the American flag was flying proudly from the aft mast?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the flags was shot down during the aircraft attacks. And our holiday colors, which is a much bigger flag, was raised. So that when the torpedo boats arrived, they absolutely saw a very large flag. As I said, they knew who we were. That was, it's absolutely ridiculous to think not. If you look at the facts, the Israelis were intent on sinking the ship because they used a torpedo. That means that was the willful attempt at murder of 294 Americans. But thank God, the ship being built in World War II, they built one hell of a cargo ship that could take a torpedo and still stay afloat. And miraculously, The only place that the torpedo could have hit was exactly where it hit, without the ship breaking apart and sinking. If the torpedo was 2 foot forward, would have blown the bow off. If it was 2 foot aft, it would have ruptured our boilers, and we would have blown apart and sunk. The torpedo itself killed 25 of my fellow communication technicians and two Marines and an NSA civilian. But like I said, this miraculously, the ship held together. I'm here to tell the story only because our Lord wanted us to stay alive to tell this story, because it's so important to America and to the rest of the world. I mean, the USS Liberty story is a microcosm of a much bigger problem that this nation and others needs to face.
Absolutely. I agree there.
Yeah, these were shipmates of mine that I will never see their faces again. I'll never stand watch with them again, or see their smiling faces. And the Israelis did, I guess, what they were ordered to do, and we have never received justice because of the lies and the deceit that has occurred since then, which in itself is as serious and as important as the fact that the Israelis tried to sink the ship. The American government hands, I should say, Lyndon Baines Johnson's and Secretary of War McNamara's hands were as dirty as the Israelis. And that story needs to be told, and the American public needs to wise up that their government has lied to them and has lied to them since then to protect our foreign relations with the Israelis.
Sir, you just mentioned a very important name, Admiral McNamara. I recognize that name as being the sole instigator of the fake Gulf of Tonkin incident that invented the Vietnam conflict. These are guys that have no problem concocting stories to go to war with other people. And indeed, I have a personal beef about the American government about that, because the Gulf of Tonkin incident caused the deaths of many, many Americans and, of course, Australians and other people all over the world. These are people that have no contention whatsoever in causing death and destruction. Do you see that as what's happening?
Yes, that was the prelude to what they did with the USS Liberty. In other words, right. Johnson had learned that he could if he did it there, he could do it now. So, in other words, if the USS Liberty could have sunk, all hands lost, and we never got a message off to indicate who attacked us, then America could have joined Israel in declaring war on Egypt or any other Middle East country that they decided was a threat. So, in other words, then America would then, let's say, govern the Middle East situation from that point on. And of course, he had to deal with the Soviets, and he had to stare down the Soviets. And what America doesn't know is that this incident, we came close to World War III with the Soviets because Syria and Egypt were their client states, and he indeed was staring them down. His intention of being, how can I put it? He felt he was king of the world. LBJ was a sick man. And as far as I'm concerned, from everything I've read and studied, I believe he ordered the attack on, he asked the Israelis to attack the ship and sink the ship. So that he could then for two things, he needed the Jewish vote for an upcoming election. He needed to solidify that, and he wanted to make sure from that point on that America now was stood beside the Israelis. That's what's happened.
And right, right.
If you look at our history since then, we've been paying that price ever since.
I can't help but to feel, the way you're talking, that the American government felt that these Navy personnel, these American citizens, and these American sons and daughters of American people were nothing more than expendable. Do you get that feeling as a survivor, and do other survivors feel that same way, that you guys were just expendable in some kind of bigger chess game that they were playing?
Oh, absolutely. You have to look at what happened to us after that, and that's what what I was saying earlier. The Navy Court of Inquiry was supposed to be a classic judicial investigation of senior qualified Navy officers to look at what happened. The entire Navy Court of Inquiry was a sham. The White House had told Admiral Kidd, who was the president of the Navy Court of Inquiry, and he told Admiral McCain, the senior officer in charge of that area in London, what he wanted, and that was that this report was going to indicate that the attack was mistaken identity. And so we start the story off. And there's more, and then there's more to it than even that. I need to talk about the immediate days following the attack. We could have gone to we were near Crete, or we were off the shores of Israel. If President Johnson was concerned about his navy sailors. And since Israel was our ally, okay, they said they made a mistake and they apologized. Okay, then why not ask the Israelis, hey, take this ship and tie it up to your shores before it sinks? I mean, we were still in danger of sinking since we had a 25 by 39 foot hole in the side of us. So in other words, get that ship tied up so there's no more loss of life. We could have sailed to Crete if he didn't want us to go to Israel. Didn't do that. Right. Right. No, he ordered us.
You've been personally called anti-Semitic for your views about Israel. Do you understand that this is actually just a trick that they use to defame people who speak openly against Israeli terrorism?
Oh, I've been listening now for the past 48 years, and I have a story to tell you a little bit about something that happened here locally. That's why I wrote my book, because there were so many incidents of this deceit and deception from not only our government, but also the media and also Israeli supporters that caused me to write the book, because, our day-to-day lives are being affected by this passion of ours. Of the USS Liberty Veterans Association to have the truth told about our attack, because it's so important to America and the rest of the world. We're a microcosm to a much, much bigger problem, as I said earlier. And that needs to be fully researched and looked at. The incident that happened to me recently in here in Palm Coast, Florida, was that this fellow, Steve Newton, who is the founder of the Silver Star Families, an organization that raises funds for families that someone who has received the Silver Star that needs money, will raise funds for that individual. Well, he was so taken aback. He never heard about the USS Liberty story. And now all of a sudden he was confronted with it. And when he heard the details, he was so upset. He felt he needed to do something to help us out. So he contacted the mayor of Palm Coast, where I live. and he sent an email giving them bullets of things or facts about the USS Liberty to them that were very nice. I mean, they're factual. But like, for instance, the USS Liberty is the most decorated naval ship for a single engagement. When the Navy, when the mayor's office encountered this, they were so taken aback that one of their citizens that lived here was the president of that of an organization that represented the ship. They felt they needed to do something, and they proclaimed June 8th, which was the day of the attack. June 8th would be USS Liberty Day, and they sent the proclamation to me. When I received the proclamation, I was really taken aback and pleased, and I called them to thank them, and the thoughts suddenly struck me. I said, could the mayor possibly give me this proclamation in front of the Palm Coast Liberty Tree at Heroes Park? Well, they were so pleased. I mean, this was really an event that really could blossom. And I told, I'm a member of the VFW, our local VFW, and I would invite my friends and the VFW and other folks to come to the event with the mayor giving me this proclamation. And I asked them, I said, could you possibly contact the news media for them to take pictures and, whatever. And they were very pleased to do that. So all these things were set up, and I decided that whoever came to the function, I would buy them a cup of coffee and a donut at our local Dunkin' Donuts. So I set that up with the store, and everything was set. Well, the event was supposed to occur on a Wednesday. The Friday before that Wednesday, I received a phone call from the mayor's office indicating that he wasn't feeling well and that he really didn't, I mean, that we weren't going to do this. And of course, what about somebody else from the city council? Well, of course, the next comment was, you realize our organization is controversial. Yes, thank you. And the moral of the story is, while it was all right to do everything here on the quiet about the USS Liberty, somebody must have got to them and reminded them that there are folks out there who are Israeli supporters that are not going to cotton to you warming up to the USS Liberty Veterans Association and giving them this proclamation. So to do it publicly was a no-no. And as I told them, that this story will be the next chapter of my book. It's just a typical thing that happens to us. The political correctness that we encounter, the anti-Semitism that we're labeled. Unfortunately, what people don't realize is this is one baby step closer and closer to this country going under for the sake of keeping Israel at this high level that they can do no wrong, and that Palestinians are subhuman, and so that, in other words, they can do whatever they want, they can break international law, and our Congress does not do anything to stop them. And that is the in essence of my plea to America to wake up, that Congress has our tripartite form of government is at stake here, and that one element of that tripart is gone. Their AIPAC has corrupted them. They are no longer the mouthpiece of American society.
I realize, Mr. Ernie Gallo, it must be very, very difficult recalling some of this stuff and bringing up the memories and how much you've been attacked and you've been besmirched over the years. And indeed, it is an agenda. It is a campaign of defaming you and defaming those liberty survivors. Now, your own personal fight for recognition for the Liberty Incident has cost you personally. As a person, do you feel that you still have a duty, even though it's cost you, you still have a duty to the lost souls of those murdered U.S. Navy men that were killed and murdered by Israel?
Absolutely, and more than that, because I've taken an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States twice, and nobody has debriefed me and told me to shut down.
Right.
The passion when I said, yes, I do, is still burning inside of me, because I see this problem that's out there. And even though we've been at this for so many years, our sons and daughters are being killed in the Middle East. And that needs to stop, or the focus needs to change. As I said, since LBJ, our government has sided with the Israelis, and that means that Palestinians are subhuman, that they don't deserve the same human rights as everybody else. And when did that happen? I mean, my father fought in World War II, and those ideals that he fought for, and everybody else's fathers, that we came out of that as the liberator nation. We no longer consider that, and we were so concerned about international relationships that we helped create the United Nations. When you think about that, I mean, you know, and then we were also very concerned about international law and everybody observing international law, so we all keep peace. Israel comes along, breaks international law. And we defend them, and we turn the blind eye to what they're doing in the Middle East. You know,
it's absolutely wrong, and it's been going on for too long. Absolutely. Now, one of the things that I found interesting in researching your case and researching your past, I believe that everything changed for you. Thought the whole scenario changed for you with the passing of Captain McGonagall. Can you explain to the audience a little bit more about that?
I can't say that there was some element about his pet. Of course, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Captain McGonagall. He was a great officer. He was a great captain. He was an old school Navy officer, and he drilled us and made sure that we did our jobs the best we could. And that kept the ship going. When we took the torpedo, of course, he gave the order to prepare to abandon ship. We had so many wounded that if we had completed that scenario, there would have been only a few, if any, that would have survived. Anyway, when he was told that the ship was holding its own, that we had stopped taking water, that it was being contained, that he did have his boilers back, he felt that he could continue on, and he rescinded the order. So I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for his intelligence, his naval command, his a knowledge of Navy ships. Yes, there's a possibility he may have known something that the rest of it didn't know. This whole Liberty affair is so clouded in secrecy and Indiendos and the rest of it that it's unbelievable, because this was supposed to be an accident. And when you send in freedom of information request to obtain information, you get either told no, it's still classified, or you get these documents that are so redacted that they don't make sense. Israelis apologized, they paid retribution to the ship. So this was an accident. So, why not provide us all the information that's required? There's a lot more to this story that needs to be told. As I said, LBJ and Bob McNamara have dirty hands in this, and America needs to know how far politicians will go. And the use of their military, abuse of their military.
To sacrifice their own for a greater political good. I understand that. Don't go anywhere, Mr. Gallo. Please stay tuned and stick with us. This is the People Who Speak radio show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, talking with special guest, Mr. Ernie Gallo, the survivor from the USS Liberty, live on Internet radio. And we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to the People Speak radio show, coming to you live across America and across the world. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, and we're back tonight with our very special guest. He's a U.S. veteran spokesperson for the USS Liberty, and his own website is www.uslibertyveterans.org. Welcome back there, Mr. Gallo, sir, and God bless you for your service.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. We're here to do what we can to make this thing right.
Oh, I hope so, sir. I hope we're getting through to the people. And you said during the break you're doing this for the 34 that didn't make it off the USS Liberty. Does that keep you going on? Does that inspire you to keep going on no matter what?
Oh, absolutely. Can you imagine if you had a father or a brother that was one of those 34 and had your country sweeping under the carpet? You know, they deserve justice as well as the survivors, but more to them than us. But yeah, that's what we need is the justice to occur.
If one of those USS Liberty servicemen was my father, I wouldn't be here today. So thank God there are people who are speaking out against the U.S. deceptions and using these sacrifices of U.S. servicemen for their political gain. We do have a question from Mr. Ken O'Keefe in the U.K., a former U.S. Marine, who asks you, Mr. Gallo, are you currently seeing any change in America regarding the awareness of the USS Liberty attack and the people's attitude towards Israel?
The Japanese general, I believe it was Tito. Maybe I'm not getting that right. Anyway, there's a Japanese general who studied military affairs in the United States. And anyway, when the Japanese attacked America, he said, "You are awakening a giant." And you know, in other words, be prepared for when that giant awakes. I feel that America, that American giant, is now stirring. That has got one eye open about the Middle East and the USS Liberty, and the skullduggery that's taking place. And I feel that more and more people are beginning to come to grips with what's really happening, and God forbid when America finally hears what they did to not only the USS crew, to the survivors, to the 34 that were killed, but also to the rest of America, in lying about the affairs in the Middle East.
So generally, people are certainly waking up about the USS Liberty attack, in your opinion?
Yes, slowly, but yeah, it's starting to happen. The number of people that now know about the Liberty is growing and growing. And for your listeners out there who for the first time are hearing about this USS Liberty attack, please get on the internet. And there's lots of books out there. And you know, don't believe me. Challenge me by going to your library or bookstore and get that information, because the U.S. government is and our media is not giving truth to you.
We have a question from C4 in Tel Aviv, Canada. He asks, who ordered the ship to be there in the first place?
The Joint Chiefs. Indirectly, the Liberty worked for the NSA, and at that time, all the services had a group that worked for the NSA to do that portion of NSA intercept. They couldn't do, because in those days we did not have the satellites and the rest of it. So we indirectly worked for NSA. So the NSA went to the Joint Chiefs, and we were right under the Joint Chiefs.
I see. Interesting. We have a question from Winston Smith in Hawaii. Mr. Gallo, would you draw any connection between the USS Liberty and the attacks of 9/11?
I really do not know everything about 9/11. I know that there is some conspiracy going on. So I am a subject matter expert of the USS Liberty and what happened to us. I really can't say one way or the other about the honesty of the reports about 9/11.
Okay. We have a question from Dreidels in Palestine, Texas. Mr. Ernie Gallo, did you know who was attacking you when the attack began? Were those aircraft unmarked?
No, the aircraft, the initial aircraft that attacked the ship was not marked. And that was a problem. And we, when we reported, finally got a message to the Sixth Fleet that we were under attack. The message that we gave them was from unknown attackers. For all the Sixth Fleet knew, it could have been the Soviet Union. No, the planes were not marked, and we did not know until the torpedo boat showed up, and they were very well marked with the flying the Israeli flag.
Right, right. We have a question from Mr. Big Stuff in Canada. Can you explain to the people what exactly was Israel's intention in shooting and destroying, trying to sink the USS Liberty?
Well, I can't really answer that because they could have handled the situation a whole lot differently than waste all those munitions. You know, after we counted over 830 penetrations in the ship's body. So in other words, that's how much firepower we were target practice for the planes and especially the torpedo boats, because we could not defend ourselves. And as a matter of fact, they committed war crimes, and which we have reported to the Pentagon, and that has gone nowhere.
Oh, we do have a question from Endung in Nullamara in Western Australia, who asks, and a very interesting question, why do you think it is that Israel attacked the USS Liberty? Was it to create a state of war in the Middle East at the time?
Well, the latest research that I have completed, I believe that Johnson asked the Israelis to attack the ship. So that the United States could come into the war on the side of Israel and would have been an excuse to help the Israelis take over Egypt and Syria and Jordan and anyone else that gave them that was a problem.
Right. We have a question from Mr. Velikovsky in Edmonton, California. Is this not just an act of war, nothing less, nothing more?
Well, looking at it from some sort of international law, absolutely was an act of war. But if the President of the United States was asking its allies to sink its own ship, I guess not.
Damn.
If I can elaborate a little further.
Sure.
If, you know, look at it from the standpoint that from a president that cared about his military. All right. So the Israelis said, well, we made a mistake. Wouldn't president say, well, please take the ship tie it up to your dock so it doesn't sink, so there's no further loss of life, and please have your medical people take care of our wounded. In other words, get that ship tied up and in a safe location. That didn't happen. That didn't happen at all. As a matter of fact, planes that were the Sixth Fleet were trying to send aircraft to us to come to our aid, and McNamara and Johnson both told the Admiral Geis, who was in charge of the Sixth Fleet, to stand down. In other words, the planes that were launched to come to our aid were told to stand down, to return to their aircraft, and the point is that we did not see any help at all until the next morning, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah. So In other words, we were still in danger of sinking, and if they had their way, the bulkheads would have let loose and broken, and the ship would have sunk overnight with all hands lost, and they would have gotten their way.
We do have a question from Majid in Canada. Why do you think the Israelis actually attacked or didn't want the ship at that place? Do you think it was because of the place it was at the time?
No, not at all. The original reason for us to go into that area, at least from what we were led to believe, we had Russian linguists on board and other linguists that if the Soviet bloc were flying Egyptian or Syrian planes, we could then report that back one of the things that we did, our intercept. Mm-hmm. But on June 8th, when we had arrived, the Israelis had militarily had gone so far that our mission was really redundant. We did not need to be there. The Joint Chiefs realized that was happening and tried to send a message to us to have us move 100 miles from shore. Unfortunately, that message never got to us. And I have personally looked or checked on that message, and it bounced all over the world. It was one of these cases where, if something's going to go wrong, it really went wrong. Unfortunately, there we stood, 13 miles offshore, as I said, the reason for our original mission was redundant. The Israelis could have fired across our bow. They could have the motor torpedo boats could come alongside and said, follow us out of this area, or for that matter, follow us to shore. They could have communicated with us in a friendly manner, and I'm sure our captain would have taken that into advice. But that didn't happen. Their answer to us being there was to attack.
We have a question from Mike in California. Did Mr. Ernie Gallo himself personally suffer any injuries during that attack? And are many of the survivors still suffering mentally and physically from that day?
Oh, absolutely. I know. I was very fortunate. I was below decks within our communication technician spaces where we did our intercept work. So I was one deck above where the torpedo hit. So I was not hurt at all. And I thank God for that. There have been sailors that were maimed, and there were some that lived short lives, maybe a few years later died from their wounds. We have one sailor, Larry Weaver in Hawaii, that has had something like 30 operations.
Wow.
Since then, because he was so mortally, not mortally, but very wounded very badly, has managed to try and stay on top of it. And, you know, every day is a day of pain for him. There were some that we never expected to live. I will say the Navy has some excellent doctors were aboard the USS America and in Germany and Rota, Spain, that helped out.
We do have a question from Deepak in Morley, Australia. Isn't it true that Israel actually used napalm to try and kill as many Americans on that boat as possible?
Yeah, they dropped napalm canisters port and starboard. So yeah, that was.
Oh my God!
In the initial attack, the first thing that happened was the Mirage jets used missiles and their 20-millimeter cannons to strafe the ship and they attempted to take out every transmit antenna that we had, so that they had heat-sinking missiles that went after the base of the antenna. The next set of aircraft was two Mystère French fighter bombers, and they dropped napalm canisters port and starboard. So, yeah, we had fires to put out, while this was going on, the planes were constantly coming back and shooting at the firefighters. While all of this was happening, the motor torpedo boats were on their way. So it didn't take long when they showed up and they started strafing the ship. And they
absolutely disgusting listening to the actual events that occurred. It really blows my mind how much how bad they were and still are to this day. We have a question from Mr. Big Stuff in British Columbia. Do the members of the USS Liberty still meet regularly, and do they speak to Congress still? I know that they've done a lot, but to no avail.
Yes, we still meet, and in fact, our 50th reunion is coming up in 2017. And we have reunions. We periodically meet, and we do our utmost to keep together and to provide mental health as much as we can to each other.
To support each other. Yes.
Support of each other. Yeah. And we've tried to talk to our congressmen to no avail. We've had some congressmen that on occasion they would go a little. They would try and help us, but it's like running into a brick wall. The rest of Congress is so concerned about reelection that the only way we can break this whole problem is for America to have where the senators and congressmen are just elected one term.
Right.
And because they're so concerned about reelections and getting, their war chest, their campaign war chest filled again, what they should be doing and listening to their constituents is mute. Who's putting money in their coffers that they're paying attention to. That's what it appears. I wish I was wrong, but after what we've experienced over 48 years, it doesn't appear like they are there to listen to to a cause, for a group to get justice.
Understood. As a USS Liberty survivor, I guess most of you have since that incident become students of Middle East politics in order to understand fully what happened to you and why. Was it much of a wake up to fully realize how much we really do not fathom about Israel's influence? Was it a real wake up call?
Oh, yes, very much so. And a wake up call to what's happening to our government. I mean, that's the real focus for us. Okay, Israel has a right to exist. I wish it was different. I wish they were more sympathetic. I wish they weren't so belligerent, and they would realize that Palestinian lives count also, that that their livelihood is as important to theirs. But with that said, our Congress, what it's done to our politicians, it has corrupted. And I mean, I can't say that I underline that word. It has corrupted our system, and it's destroying our country.
Absolutely. You know, my own YouTube channel called Stop Funding Israel is devoted to informing people about which corporations and companies are supporting Israel with money and material support. Now, do you think people in America just don't fully realize how widespread that actually is?
No, I don't. But as I said, we're doing everything we can to get the word out. Attend all kinds of conventions, and any time someone wants us to speak at one of their affairs, if we have a survivor that lives near them, that God gave grace for them to speak, we will get that sailor to them, so that, they could hear from their own lips, to their organization.
Okay. One last question, sir. Do you support the Stop Funding of Israel yourself?
Absolutely. I agree.
God bless you. God bless you. We're going to have you on again. I still have a lot more questions to get through, but you've been listening to the People Speak radio show with special guest, Mr. Ernie Gallo. I'd like to thank him so much and remind all the listeners to visit his website at www.usslibertyveterans.org. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Mr. Ernie Gallo.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Join us coming up soon on this People Speak show when I talk with Elish D'Avalon, with Max Egan once again, and esteemed researcher professor Ian Plimer. Stay tuned for those interviews coming soon. Big thanks go out to the producers Mike, Dog, and Donald, and to all my friends throughout the world, all the guys who give me so much support. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You can tune into my own channel called Stop Funding Israel on YouTube. But for me for now, take care and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of summer people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land.